Greetings. My name is Praheem, and I am the CEO of Prophetic Productions, and I am We Film Collective. I am a filmmaker, a writer, director, producer, creative, black man trying to make it in America. Peace.
It was all a dream. It was all a dream.
So I realized probably around high school, 14, 15, that like I knew that I wanted to be a filmmaker, that I wanted my dream was to have my art to be seen on the big screens and to be seen by as many people as possible. You know, around that time, the guidance counselors and teachers are asking, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to do with your future? And so I had to take an honest look and reflected on the things that I love doing, like writing, like poetry, photography, music, and I was able to find an industry that combined all of those in the craft of filmmaking. And from that moment since, I was hooked, and hooked on the screen and hooked on trying to make filmmaking a full-time reality for myself.
This is episode 6 of From the Dream to the Screen, your host Ali Rack, and I have a special someone here today, Praheem. Thank you for joining
me. Thank you for having me.
Now, let me just give you guys a background. Praheem is a talented filmmaker that I actually met in Los Angeles last February, I believe, at the Pan-African Film Festival. He was screening his film, Stuck, a short film. And I want him to actually tell you what it's about before I ask more questions.
Okay, so Stuck is a short film. It stars the talented Javicia Leslie and Heidi Williams. And it's about two strangers. They hook up for a one-night stand, and they end up getting physically stuck in the act of having sex. And so they now must spend the rest of the time getting to know each other in order to separate. And so it's a comedy, you know, a new twist on a romantic comedy, and just an opportunity to be creative and get back out there. And put my creativity just back out into the universe again.
So now, even from the movie poster, you have two gorgeous black people who are intertwined. It's not X-rated, but you can tell what they got stuck doing. Okay. And so your first thought is, what the hell? You know what I'm saying? So I saw it. It was hilarious. Acting was great. Shots were great. You did a really good job. I know you obviously, you go to film festivals. For people who don't know, there's always a question and answer after every film. I was in there, but I still want to dig deeper. Now, number one, is that a real thing? Like, can you get stuck having sex?
Yes, this is a real thing. They've, you know, had reports of this throughout history. And as I was working on it, I did my research, and I had other filmmaker friends kind of share stories with me and like show me other media content in which they had these subject matters in it. And the idea was actually given to me by someone else. It was a writer who had this idea and pitched it at film school. And I guess they rejected his premise. And so we were kind of just at a bar talking about it. He shared the idea. And I was just kind of looking for something to play with and create with. And from there, it was just like an opportunity to just play with his idea, see where I can take it. And, you know, doing my research, come to find out that it is a real clinical term. It's called I messed up and forgot the damn title of it now. It's called...
I can't
remember the actual term, but there is a clinical term for it.
Okay, and I'm just curious, if that happens to you, what is that phone call like to the doctor? Like, is it an ER? Like, hey, come here, this happens.
Well, see, and that's the comedy, is like you don't want to have to make that phone call. So everybody's trying to do anything possible that they could to not make that phone call. And then if you had to make it, you would just call the ambulance and try to tell them to help. And not be as try to be as vague as possible. Actually, I think I seen it where it was like on there's the show on FX or something with like 1,000 ways to die, and someone actually like died having sex and getting stuck, and then they had like a heart attack while they were stuck inside the other person. And so, you know, really it's all about relaxing and letting your body kind of calm down so your other body parts can calm down as well.
What a way to go. I mean, damn.
Yeah.
Well, I think, well, first of all, what I loved about the film is that it's original. And I think that's what a lot of people appreciate about the topic in general, that it's original content. Now, how did you pitch this idea to, like, your DP, director of photography, for people who don't know, your editor, actors? How did that conversation go with people when you explained the film to them?
Well, you know what? With this subject and with this pitch, the telling them the title and what it was about, I feel like that itself got people interested. They were like, oh, wow, this is something different. This is something that I could see possibly has legs and may be able to, you know, travel. And I think when people saw what we had actually done, they were like, okay, I could get behind it. So say, for instance, I'm talking to the DP. I tell him the premise. When he reads the script and actually saw that we'd actually taken our time and that this is not a porn piece and we're not just trying to be gratuitous for no reason and it has heart, the DP was like, oh, I love this. This is so creative and this is a fun way to do something. And everybody kind of came on board after they saw what we were doing. So once they saw the script, the key people were able to get involved. Finding people like Javicia Leslie, she fell in love with the script and was like, I want to work on this project. And then once we started shooting and the content started coming back looking good and the dailies looked good, it was really easy to get everybody else. The script and the subject matter had them enticed. And then the fact that we had great coverage and great footage and we had talented actors, it was like a no-brainer, I feel like. And then money, you know, you pay people. And they'll do anything out here in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Everybody got to eat, you know?
That's right. You know, and you learn that it's like, there's going to be people out here who are just going to look at it as a job. And it's like, hey, yes, I can sound design your film for X amount of dollars because that's what I get paid to do. But I think it does help when it's something that's different, it's something that's unique, and, you know, people can have fun doing it.
Yeah, let me scroll down. Okay, so how long were you working on it from the time that you were at the bar talking with your filmmaker friend about this idea, that time until completion? How long was that?
Oh, Lord, that's a long time. So I feel like the idea was given to me, and then I started working on this film called Burning Sands. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, I definitely heard about it.
So I was working in locations on that film. And so that kind of, I had the idea, was challenged by another filmmaker that, hey, you did this feature film in 2013, but can you make something else? And so it was like, I feel like I moved out to Los Angeles in 2015, started working on that Burning Sands film in like 2016. So when I came back, I was like, all right, I need to do my own thing. I was like, I enjoyed the process of working on Burning Sands, but it just reiterated for me that I want to make my own content and focus on myself. And so I had that idea and I was like, I'm going to start writing it. So I would say we started in 2016. I don't know exactly when, cranked out a draft and kept reworking that draft for about a year until I felt like the script was the best possible script that we could put together. Kind of had like some growing pains because the producer who I originally was trying to work with, we weren't seeing eye to eye on how to make movies. And I think he was trying to do more of a LA thing where it was like, hey man, I want you to write out a blog post about why you're doing this movie, or like write out an explanation to your DP about what you're trying to do and write this thing for the. I was like, man, just give me a list of people and let me have my own conversations with these people and let me make my decisions. So it's like, I'm much more of a hands-on filmmaker. So I needed to just get out here and started making stuff. He didn't want to go and do it that process. So we separated and I was almost about to not do the film at all. And by the grace of God, a producer from out of Richmond hit me up and was like, hey, I'm looking for something to do. I would love to do something with you. I'm willing to put up some money. And so that kind of kept the ball going. So we shot this film 2017 in Richmond. It was a 3-day shoot. And then from 2017, we edited the film. I had some editors, ended up having to let two of my editors go. We didn't see eye to eye. And so many times I was like, I don't know if I'm even going to finish making this project. And then so ended up hiring another editor, and we finished the film February 2018. So total 2-year process from idea to having it fully complete and in the can, February 2018. And then we started our festival run, I would say the summer of 2018.
Ooh, child. First of all, it doesn't surprise me that it took that as long from conception to, you know, festival run. But what I can relate to, and a lot of people in the film industry, and even just people in general, when you're working on projects, finding the time to say, you know what, you and I don't see eye to eye, we have to separate, but then keep the momentum going on the project and the goal at hand, right?
Like, it's, yeah, and it's tricky. It's not an easy thing to do, and all of this, I'm doing this while working a 40-hour work week.
Yeah, that grind is real. I completely relate to the firing and not being on the same page, or even, you know, people saying they're going to do something and don't do it, or taking too long. With that being said, do you have any regrets during this whole entire process? What would you have done differently if you had to?
Oh, plenty of things. I mean, all right. So one, I try not to have any regrets, because there's just nothing that you can do with it. But yeah, there's plenty of things that I would have done differently. I wish I would have had more time. I wish I would have communicated better to everybody and which I work with. So, like, for me, this was the first film that I've done since my feature film. And it was like, 5 years had gone between making one film to doing this film. And so I feel like I had almost forgot how to make a movie. And so I had to get back on the bicycle to kind of learn how to make a movie the way that I used to. And so part of me, I just wish that I was like a little bit, wasn't as rusty. And I wish that I was a little bit more sharper in my skills. I wish that I would have planned it out a little bit more. I wish I had more money. There was some relationships that were soured because of creative choices. I still am very glad that I made those creative choices, but I definitely regret losing some of the creative professional relationships. But I was willing to lose them for the creative decisions.
Sacrifices. What it boils down.
And so honestly, after all is said and done, I don't have any real regrets, because I mean, this film allowed me to travel the country for a year or two. I got to meet so many amazing filmmakers and so many amazing creatives on the journey. I was able to meet someone like yourself. And it just kind of gave me more encouragement to keep going. And so I think, like, as filmmakers, we need encouragement. It's a lot of lonely days when you're spending time with that script and it's just you. Or, you know, you're trying to beat out these characters, or you're trying to get in. It's a lot of lonely times. So the festivals and having people congratulate you on a job well done, that's the encouragement that I feel like was much needed in my life, to just say, hey, man, keep going on this filmmaker journey. You're too far to turn back, and you got to keep creating.
You know, I'm so glad you said what you said, because all too often we don't really know what goes on behind the scenes of a creative. So there are a few Black filmmakers that I'm looking at right now, like, oh my gosh, they're great. They're inspiring me. Their content's amazing, original, hella talented. But then they'll like get on social media and say, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, in a dark place right now. I'm so glad. Like, they're going through something, right? You don't think they are until someone says something positive or encouraging them. And you're like, well, damn, they're going through what I'm going through right now. And in my mind, they're way more successful, or at least it appears that they are, or maybe they've gotten accolades for what they're doing. They're recognized for their work. So I completely agree with you, and I do encourage people, and I need to stop admiring people from behind, right? Like, I need to literally, like, hey, let me just send an email to this person and say, you're dope, and I love what you're doing. Your film inspired me, or your direction and what you're doing inspired me. And that's just a little tidbit. I encourage everyone to do that. So I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because I had too, going on this process, I again got to meet you in LA at this festival. But it is amazing to be around other creatives and like-minded individuals, because it does keep you going.
Absolutely. And it's an energy that you can feed off, whereas like if you're in a town and you're the only creative, like whose energy are you feeding off of? Whereas like, hey, in LA, you have events like the Pan-African Film Festival, but just being out in a coffee shop, you're going to be surrounded by creative people. And that's an energy. You may not have to talk to these people, but you could just vibe off of knowing that, like, everybody out here believes that they can do the impossible. Where back home, you tell somebody you want to make a movie, they're going to be like, oh, you crazy. Get out of here. Like, no, I can do it. I'm serious. I know how to do it. I can do it. I'll put it together. No, man, you kidding. And it's like, all right, man. Well, at least out here, everybody is, they have faith. They believe that they can do things, that they can create a song out of their head and turn it into something. And so it's like, I love being out here and having that energy be in such abundance, because when I was back home in Richmond, there was energy there. It's not to the same magnitude.
I can see that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because so many people are used to the same thing. It's that, like you said, the impossible. And that's only in certain people's minds and the aura and the energy. I completely relate to that. Now, let's take it way back. I know you mentioned you had a film that you did 5 years before Stuck. What sparked your filmmaking in general?
Well, so I set off on this filmmaker path at the age of 15. And so prior to like fully dedicating my life to filmmaker, I thought I was going to do something more athletic, play basketball like most young Black kids. And then I just realized that I wasn't that good. It was like, you got LeBron James out here playing and busting people up in high school. We the same age. He was like a realization, like, hey, maybe the NBA isn't going to happen for me. So I was like looking at where all of my strengths lie and what I enjoy doing. And I love writing. I did poetry and short stories. I had a love for photography, and I love music. And so when I found that there was an industry that kind of put all of these things together, I was like, this is what I want to do. I had people like Spike Lee as a blueprint to say, okay, here's a brother who's doing it. I got John Singleton. You got these people like Gina Prince Blythewood. And so all of these dope Black filmmakers are here and in front of me to see when I'm in middle school and high school. So they start asking, what do you want to do when you grow up? I told them I wanted to be a filmmaker and make movies. And so I just started moving in that direction. And so my senior year, I made a documentary on my senior year and sold it to all my classmates for $10 a piece. And then I was able to like kind of continue on. I was doing short stories. I went to Howard University for my undergrad, and I majored in film and continued to make content there. I wasn't as serious about filmmaking in undergrad as I should have been, but I was living life, having fun, and kind of, creating stories that I would later go back to write about. But I did enough content while I was at Howard that I was able to put together a reel and submit it to Florida State University. And then that's where I went to receive my master's in filmmaking. And so went to Florida State, graduated in 2010. Before I graduated, they would always tell us like, hey, filmmakers that come out with a master's degree, on average, it takes about 10 years for a filmmaker to make their first film out of graduate school. And I was just like, hell no. I've already taken so long. I still want to make movies. I really didn't want to go to film school. It was just like, this is what you're supposed to do. So I was just like, I want to make a movie. And while I was in film school, my mother passed away in a car accident and my father was still alive. And so I knew I wanted to go back home and spend more time with my father. So I went back home to Richmond, Virginia with the game plan of, hey, I want to spend time with my father. I want to figure out how can I make a movie as soon as possible. And that's what I set the ball doing. And so as soon as I got back to Richmond, I remember that there was a cat named Tim Reed and Daphne Reed who owned a studio in Petersburg. And so flashback to when I was in high school, I had actually went out to the studio and followed Daphne Reed around for a whole day and basically told her I wanted to be a filmmaker. And she was like, hey, if you want to be a filmmaker, I suggest you go out there and learn everything there is to be about being a filmmaker. And then once you think you know it all, go and learn some more. And so that kind of stuck with me. And so as I continue to matriculate, I've always like kept in contact with them. And so when I got back to Richmond, I reached out to the studio, found out that they were still out there and was like, hey, how can I get down? How can I volunteer? I volunteered with Tim and Daphne for a little bit. And then once I had developed a relationship with them, I let Tim know that I had a script and I was interested in trying to get it made. And I had a little bit of money from my father. Flash backwards a little bit. I skipped a step. So I'm trying to come up with this idea. I had an old script that I had written in high school. That was kind of like an R-rated high school story. And one of my best friends was home with me. He was like, man, what you need to do is something positive, something, you know, about how we grew up together. We were in the Scouts together. We were in the church together. And then we all went to school together. And that was just like, oh, wow, that's a dope idea. And that was kind of the birthplace for this idea about the Muddy Lions, and which is a group of kids who were in the Scouts together. They go to school together and you see what kind of impact the Scouts have. And so that started right in that. As soon as I got home, this is all happening while I'm volunteering with Tim Reed, so that by the time I have a script finished, I'm able to take it to him, show it to him, and let him know that I had about $200,000 to try to make it. He liked the script. He thought it had some potential. And the fact that he didn't have to put any money up, he was like, all right, I'll help you. I'll help you make it. And so we teamed up and I hired him and his production company as a producer, because I know I had never produced a movie before and I was going to need some help. And so brought them on and we set out to make this film. And so I started writing the film in 2010. As soon as I graduated, the first draft was written in 2011. My father gave me the money. 2012, we shot the film. It was a 15-day shoot. We finished editing the film in 2013. We released it in the theaters in October of 2013. Was supposed to be a 1-week theatrical release, and it ended up staying in the theaters for 5 weeks. And we ended up, that whole first week, we came in third out of, 20 films. We came in third behind Captain Phillips and Cloudy with a Meatballs Part 2. And so movie stayed in the theater for 5 weeks, and then I thought we were going to go on a big theatrical run. That didn't happen. So we put it out in the festivals and took it on like a festival run for about 2 to 3 years. And then I kind of self-distributed the film on my own. Eventually, me and producers kind of went our own separate ways. But long story short, the film has now been distributed on. It's now available on like Tubi TV. It's available for free. The film ended up having a national partnership with the Boy Scouts of America. They fell in love with the film and actually started using the movie as a way to recruit more blacks and minorities to the Boy Scouts. And it's been a really good success for me. It's just, you know, something to have on my resume. And so that is the story of my first film.
Yeah, didn't expect all that.
That was a lot.
Damn, though. Okay, but you know what? Because we're Facebook friends also, and so I have seen you post about it. I just didn't know what it was. Because I was so fixated on Stuck, because that's the only one I had seen. But now I'm going to go back and watch the film.
Thank you. I mean, and I think you enjoy it. It's meant for kids, but it's about a young kid. He ends up witnessing a murder, and he has to make a decision. Is he going to keep to the code of the Scouts or keep to the code of the streets? And so you watch what the Boy Scouts, the potential the Boy Scouts has on this young boy's life. And for me, it was just an opportunity to kind of speak to this current generation and share with them some of the values that my family had instilled in me and just happened to be reiterated by the Boy Scouts. And so very proud of the film. And, you know, no matter what, for me, it was a very valuable lesson in filmmaking. Like, I learned a lot about, you know, producing, distribution. Like, these are all things that I would have never learned without having something to go through the fire with.
And the fact that you had the relationship with Tim and Daphne Reed. For those of you who don't know who they are, Daphne Reed is Aunt Viv. The second one?
It's the second Aunt Viv.
And Tim Reed is sister. The dad. Dope people. Those are, I guess that would be a reference for people who are our age and older. Younger audience members don't know who sister is, but that's actually a really dope relationship to have at the time. Now, talk to me about Walking Under the Influence.
So Walking Under the Influence, this is what I would love to be my next feature film. It's currently in development right now. It's about a young, mildly depressed college kid who has returned home like post-college, and he's trying to figure out his life, and his best friends come home to celebrate the 4th of July with him, and there's this big crazy party going on, but there's a citywide DUI checkpoint that's kind of in the way, so these young guys decided they're going to walk to the club with a large bottle of alcohol, and there's all these obstacles that get in their way, and it's really just an odyssey tale. It's a raunchy, crazy comedy about, you know, three guys just trying to have a good time, and there's all these obstacles in their way.
Okay, good, because I was like, oh no, something's gonna happen. When you said comedy, I was relieved. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely comedy. I wanted to do something. Of course, I didn't know that Stuck was gonna be the next project that I did, but I just wanted to do something the complete opposite of my first film, because I didn't want to get like typecast and like being a kids only director.
I feel you. When are you going to start shooting that one, if you know?
Oh, I have zero idea. Right now, I'm trying to get the script tight. And once we get the script tight, then it's all about trying to figure out how it's going to get made. I'm in this position in my life where I feel like I want to transition. Of course, I love doing independent things and just having control. But there's so much more that can be done with like real resources and real money. And so part of me wants to attempt to pitch this feature idea in the studio system while also like attempting to see if I can raise money on my own. And so this project is probably, many years away from being executed because I don't have any money. Not the type of money that I would need. Like I've had a few people tell me that they would like to see the script done for like $1 million or like $1.5 to $2 million. It's like, okay, that's not a lot of money in Hollywood, but that's a lot of money to you and I, you know?
Absolutely. We can bang out a few movies for $1 million.
We did the Money Lions for $250,000.
Right. Okay, so now I'm going to bring it back. Because to Stuck real quick, because obviously the film is about sex. Sex scenes. In your opinion, when are they absolutely essential to a film or a show?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like it's really up to the creator, like what works for them. To me, I feel like it's just serve the story. So if it's something that we need to see, if there's going to be like character development in the scene, then I feel like it serves a purpose. But there's, to me also, I feel like there will be moments where there's like art in the sex and like the beauty of it. But I don't know. I just feel like it depends on the story. So like for Stuck, we knew that we wanted to have sex, but we didn't want it to just be you know, just complete butt naked. And one, we're not paying these people with so much money. So I didn't feel comfortable trying to like expose some up and coming actress for free. So then how is she going to go and try to do this later on and get compensated for it? So it's like, there was really no need for us to be completely naked. I wanted her to feel completely comfortable. And then it was written in the story that is like, as soon as they realize that they're stuck and she realizes that she's stuck next to the stranger, she covers herself up. Therefore, like, we don't have to spend the entire movie with her just completely naked. We can suggest these things with like the coverage and the way that we decide to shoot it so that it feels like they're naked, but we don't necessarily need to be completely nude to create this vulnerability. But like I said, it just really depends. It's like, you know, you have your movies like Monsters Ball, where it's like, I don't really know if that was necessarily needed, but it was probably the best thing in the movie. So it really just depends on, like, I feel like the story, the creator, and like, how does this serve the story? And I'm all for it if it's going to help move the story forward. But it's like, sometimes you could just fade to black with two people kissing on the bed and understand that, you know, sex is being had.
You know what? I completely agree with you on that. I think that sometimes sex scenes can be fillers, where instead of writing dialogue, it's just, oh, we're going to have sex for like 3 pages. And it's like, okay, we know what you're doing here. It's a lack of dialogue. I'm so glad you mentioned Monsters Ball, because this might be a very unpopular opinion. But I actually really like that sex scene, because to me, it showed emotion between the characters as they were both going through something difficult emotionally at the same time. And I saw that emotion during sex. I know at the time people hated that. But I actually understood that sex scene. To me, it was real. It was raw. And it pertained to their character development.
And I feel like you would have to have watched the entire movie for you to know it. But most people just watch that scene. But true. Like you're saying, it was like it served the story. You could tell that both of those characters needed it in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I also don't like. What did you say?
I was going to say, do you watch Power?
Dude, get out of my head. Get out of my head. That's exactly what I was like, saying.
Not Power. I don't want anybody to take it like I'm knocking Power, but I feel like they give a sex scene every episode because they know black people like looking at it, but it ain't doing nothing for the story.
My dude, when I tell you that's what I was talking about when I said sex scene for... It was second season, correct me if I'm wrong, second season or something. My husband and I are watching one of those episodes, 7 or 8, and the first 10 minutes, every single character was having sex. And I was like, dude, come on. Like, we don't need all this, though. And it was random. Like, we don't know. Like, we know people have sex in life, but we don't need to see it. You know what I'm saying? And especially with all the characters in the beginning, that means you're trying to, you know, fluff stuff up. So the fact that you missed see, that's how I know. That's how I know you real. You know what I'm saying? You're in my head. Anyway, but yeah, we're not knocking Power. But that was exactly what I was thinking about. So, so I just thought I would have to ask you that question, because I do think that that is one scene that it gets used often, where it's essential or not. So also now with every interview, I have this line of questioning I asked everyone. And okay, I actually have, fire. I'm sorry?
It's going to be like rapid fire questions or?
Kind of, you can elaborate. It's not just one word answers. Okay. Some of them are. It's only 3 of them. And I usually ask everyone the last question is the same, but the first 2 usually pertain to each filmmaker. So the first one is, okay, who is your favorite on-screen couple?
TV favorite or on-screen couple. And it doesn't matter from what era or decade, right?
Right, doesn't matter.
See, part of me was going to do Bill Cosby and Felicia Rashad, but now I don't know if I can't use them.
Well, you could.
Nah, I mean, I'm just going to do one just for the sake of it. I'm gonna, let's do Tyrese and Taraji P. Henson.
I love that movie.
Actually. Even though it's a little rapey, like I still be like, yo, Tyrese raped her. That, you know, I think that in the essence, I think I like that couple when they were good to each other. They had some good times.
They did. And now I'm listening to the dialogue. Doggone it. I'm gonna be thinking about that movie the rest of the night. Who was your film or TV inspiration growing up? I see you kind of answered that earlier, but if there's one particular person that you can think of who inspired you in this industry.
Well, I would have to say Spike Lee has probably been my biggest inspiration. Just kind of seeing him as a black guy out here coming out of a HBCU, being able to tell his stories, and then just the work ethic, the fact that he basically is making one project a year over the last 25, 30 years is just remarkable. So it's not like I don't necessarily love every single one of his projects, but just the fact that he's constantly making stuff, he's constantly trying and attempting new things. So he's probably the biggest film person. And then I would say, you know, in my own personal life, like my father is, I know what you said outside, so I'm not even really my father, but my father would be one. And then I would say like a TV show that really kind of helped point me in the right direction was A Different World. Just kind of having that variety of blackness within the cast, and then just the way that they made college look, the fun that they had really kind of made me know that I wanted to go to college. And, you know, it just kind of set the tone for my life and just kind of what type of content I would want to make. I still look at that show and I get kind of angry that we allow our television shows to go so far from what we used to be able to create. It's just like, they don't make TV like that.
Now, when you say they don't make TV like that anymore, do you want to expand a little bit on, before I ask my last question, because expand on what that means to you when you say that?
Maybe I'm not watching as much TV as I used to, but I can't recall watching a black TV show in the past 10 years that has given me those type of feelings. And again, I mean, we can go back and say, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and things like that, but that was 20 years ago. And so when I look at the television landscape as far as black content, the quality in programming, it just doesn't move me. It was like this show had it was quality as far as like it was good, just period. It made you laugh. But it also had like it had subjects. It was about something. It wasn't just booty shaking or who's, it wasn't like reality TV. I don't even know what black shows are on TV right now. Like just a full black show.
Like with all black, well, there's Blackish, all black characters.
Yeah. And so like, and that's one of them. And I've watched it, but I know I just haven't been fully into it as I should. But it's like, that's probably the closest thing to it.
I enjoyed Survivor's Remorse that they canceled. I was really upset about. It was actually a really good show.
It was on Showtime, and it wasn't like something that was easily accessible for
me. You're right, and that's you're absolutely right.
Power, you got it. Like I'm talking about, and I guess, and I'm just saying, like mainstream television. Network television is the word.
You're right. No. On network. You're right. I mean, and I think. And you brought up a good point, because now I feel like with all the reboots, they're wondering, oh, well, this is what content was back then. Let's go ahead and reboot it, because the same audience has grown and they want something similar instead of coming up with something original. And you know what?
They're going to reboot them and they're not going to have the same soul in them, unfortunately.
Exactly. And you know, when I get that feeling that you had for a different world that I had and people in our generation had, I get that feeling when I go to Black film festivals. And I see content that's original content from talented people. I mean, some of the best films that I've seen in the last 2 years were at film festivals.
And that's a beautiful thing, but it's also a sad thing because a lot of these dope movies that you're seeing on these Black film festivals, where do they go?
Yeah.
It could be the best movie on that Black film festival circuit and still not get distribution.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing that's heartbreaking because, like, these movies deserve wider audience. These movies deserve to have marketing dollars. But, you know, you'll get to see them at Pan African.
Right, right. Yeah, it is sad. One day.
But I'm hoping that, because I got a friend who works at Netflix, and he was telling me how, like, you know, Netflix is always talking about how they want to have more diversity. And he challenged me. He was like, well, how come y'all don't go to no Black film festivals? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, if people, they keep saying that they're interested in diversity and all of this. And it's like, well, how come y'all don't send distributors to these Black film festivals if you keep saying this stuff? Because that's where the young independent creators are. They're at the film festivals trying to get some money.
Exactly. That's where the original content is and the undiscovered talent is. You just preach the word. Absolutely. Now, my last question, because that could be a whole other podcast by itself. So, last question. What is the one show or movie that when it comes on TV, not Netflix, but like if you were watching regular back in the day TV, when it comes on TV, you have to stop your tracks and watch it. Regardless, you're doing laundry, you have to watch, stop and watch it. What is that one TV or movie?
Oh, this is easy. This is probably my favorite movie out there. Braveheart.
Wow.
It's one of those ones where it's like, I'll sit and watch it through a few commercials. I may not sit and watch the whole thing, but it's like, if it's on, I'm going to look at it.
Okay. And that, yeah, I kind of, you know, because we could see things now. I don't even know. I'm guessing you have the DVD for Braveheart.
Yeah. I have it on DVD, and then I also have it I have a Plex server, and I have it on there as well in case I, you know, just want to watch it on a streaming service.
Yes, yes. One last thing. I always let filmmakers or my interviewees give me some parting words for the audience. This audience is not just filmmakers, but people who enjoy the arts in general. So do you have a call to action? Do you have anything that you want to, lasting words before we go?
Well, to the audience members who enjoy films and they love creativity, I would just say, please go out to your film festivals and support the next wave of creatives and filmmakers. And if you have the time, take the time and talk to them and share your opinions with them. They mean the world, especially for a young up and coming filmmaker. You never know what positive reinforcement could do to someone. They could be on the verge of quitting and you tell them that you love their work and that, you know, they could give them the motivation to continue on. And then to any filmmakers who are out there and listening, keep creating, keep finding your voice, keep developing your voice. Filmmaking and writing and creating is a craft. The more you do it, the better you will become. So try your best to get your Malcolm Gladwell 100,000 hours in and just keep working and keep trying your best to perfect your craft. And as long as you keep going, as long as you keep working, nothing can stop you from getting where you want to go, as long as you just continue to work, continue to write, and continue to create.
Absolutely. What's for you is for you.
That's right. And you got to just kind of keep your eyes on your own path, because out here, it could be very easy to start comparing yourself to your peers and comparing yourself to the Issa Rae's and the Jordan Peele's. And, well, why is this not? Well, everybody's going to have a completely different path. And you have no idea the struggles and the obstacles that people have gone through to get where they are today. And so, you know, just kind of focus on your lane, because, you know, when you watch runners and they're running their race, you know, they have to focus on their lane. The moment you start watching somebody else's, you're gonna get out of your own path and you're gonna mess yourself up. So just focus on yourself and, you know, keep creating.
I appreciate it. Now, where can we find you on social media and website?
So you can find me on all social media platforms as Praheem. It's Praheme. And that is my website as well, as Praheem.com. And right now, yes, social media is the best way to interact with me. If you direct message me, I'm always pretty responsive. I'm always down to help any filmmakers that are in need. I don't have much money, but I do have time and I do have information. So if I can share anything that will help you on your journey, that's easy for me to do. And so, yeah, just follow me as I continue on this journey and look forward to connecting with you. And hopefully we'll be able to see you at a movie theater in the near future.
Absolutely. And I forgot to tell people, very beginning of this podcast, before we go, when I met Praheem, saw the film, afterwards everyone's, you know, shaking his hand. He has movie, small size movie posters that he's giving out to people. I actually had you sign it, right? And I told my husband, I was like, man, I'm going to save this for the girls. So we have other stuff that's, you know, autographed from other people that, you know, we're going to save for the girls one day just to have, you know, pass it down. And my husband looked at me crazy. He was like, did you see what the poster looks like? I was like, man, you don't know what this man going to be one day. Shoot, they're going to have it in a file. They'll look at it when they're older. You know, it's probably inappropriate from a four-year-old, but, you know, 20 years from now, she'll appreciate it.
Exactly. It's all about the future. And, you know, one thing that we can't deny about our children is eventually they're going to become adults and they're going to do the same things that we did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for dropping the gems. The conversation was very dope and authentic. And just like you said, support the local film festivals, support local artists, your rappers, the canvas, buy artwork, you know, buy a $10 DVD, you know, download content, you know, go to a poetry spot, snap your fingers, give people your energy, ask questions, you know, we feed off of that. So thank you, Praheem.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Alyssa, for having me. And congratulations for even having your own platform to share your voice. I mean, the fact that you're out here and you're spreading the word and you're sharing other people's stories, and it's a beautiful thing. So keep doing what you're doing and you never know who you're going to inspire.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And like always, you can check this podcast out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. It was all